You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Elisa.
It's time for episode 421 of Geekiest Show Ever.
It is.
And I probably still sound a little congested.
And why is that?
Why is that? Because I was on a cruise last week and I picked up a cold.
No surprises there, unfortunately.
Yay
where
me.
All did you go? You went to the Caribbean, but where specifically?
No, I did
would
not.
You go
I
again?
Went to Bermuda.
Oh, Bermuda. Okay. You just Bermuda? Went to Bermuda?
Yeah, 3 days in Bermuda.
Okay. Would you recommend it?
Yeah, but it wasn't what I thought it was. I was expecting the pink sand, but it's not the pink sand that I had in my mind. It was more like we went to Horseshoe Bay, which is one of those places everybody says, if you go to Bermuda, you have to go to Horseshoe Bay. So we did. Where the water and the sand meet, that's where it's pink.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't see it. At least I couldn't see it with the naked eye. Mm-hmm. I'd have had my sunglasses on. And the funny thing is, yesterday we met some friends for lunch and they had gone to Bermuda last year. She said the exact same thing. They went to Horseshoe Bay. She couldn't see the sand as being pink until she put her sunglasses on. It's a little bits of coral.
Like rose-colored lenses or something.
Yeah. But Horseshoe Bay is, it's the sand is nice and smooth.
Yeah.
The water is beautiful. You can walk right in.
Is it a clean beach?
Yeah.
Seaweed?
But it's super, no.
No, okay.
Super, super expensive in Bermuda. It cost us $20 to rent a chair. Free to get in, but $20 for a chair. And it's also, it was either 15 or 20 for the umbrella, but no umbrellas because the wind was just whipping.
And if you're on a cruise, you're not bringing your own fold-up chairs, huh?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Not possible. The first beach we went to was right near the pier at King's Wharf. And you just walk maybe 5 minutes from the ship. That was $20 to get in, $20 for a chair.
Wow. Per person?
Per person. The rocks were like, if you've been to Cozumel beaches, it was like Cozumel. Rocks all over the beach, rocks getting into the water, not a smooth transition once you're even off the rocks. It wasn't good.
Yeah.
And the food
so
is
don't go there.
Crazy expensive. It's fine if you want to go to a beach, you don't want to travel, because everything you have to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be expensive just getting from point A to point B.
So what is your favorite beach out of all the beaches you've been to on a cruise?
We loved Antigua. We loved Labadee in Haiti, which was Royal Caribbean's private island. It's not an island. It's like a private resort. Beautiful. And we also love Royal Caribbean's Perfect Day at Coco Cay, which is in Nassau, Bahamas.
And what do you love about those beaches? Like, what makes them a better beach than these other beaches in Bermuda?
Just the relaxing factor, the water, everything being clean, nice smooth sand, the view.
So when you're walking in barefoot, you're not like getting cut up by shells and tangled in seaweed, and is it hot sand? What's the temperature?
Oh, my God. I think the hottest sand I ever walked on was in St. Croix a couple years ago. You could not go from your beach chair to the water. You had to wear your flip-flops and take them off at the edge and hope that they didn't fly away.
Yeah.
You know, float away into the water.
That's my only experience with sand, is because if you don't, you're getting cut up by shells and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would like to know, which beach can I really sink my feet in and not get injured?
Nassau has nice beaches too.
Yeah. Okay. We should, I should come to you and make a, you could do that in Maps, in Apple Maps, and you can make a beach tour of all of your favorite beaches. That would be fun.
I've been to a lot of them.
I know. I'm going to pick your brain about
Aruba
it.
Aruba is awesome. I love Aruba.
I'm starting to dream about traveling now.
Yeah.
But overall, was it a good cruise? Was it one of your favorites, or have you been on better cruises?
No, not one of my favorites.
Okay.
It was Celebrity Cruise Line. They have small ships. Now, for some people, that's perfect. I have a friend who cruises Celebrity all the time, sometimes with her husband, sometimes with her sisters. And she likes it because it is small. It takes no time to go from the front of the ship to the back of the ship. I like the big ones where you basically have to call a cab to get from the back of the ship to the front of the ship because they're so big.
Wow.
Those are the ones I like. Because the thing with any type of ship, you can always take an elevator from the fourth deck to the 15th deck.
Oh, my
God. But there's nothing you can do to go from the front to the back or the back to the front.
Mm-hmm.
That's on you.
Mm.
And I did do a lot of stair climbing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
A lot.
Yeah. So you can, that's so you can eat all that food and not get and gain as much weight because you work it off by walking from the ship.
Oh, up and down. Well, we were more toward the back of the ship. And if we went up a couple levels, it was the buffet. And if we went down a few levels, it was the dining room.
Mm. Hmm.
So up and down, up and down, up and down.
Hmm. That's a lot of steps. Wow. But you can take elevators, so.
Yes.
Hmm. Well, sounds like a good experience nonetheless. Something that you wouldn't do this particular cruise again, though. You would do something else.
No, I don't know. Celebrity is just not my favorite. We like Royal Caribbean.
Well, how many have you done besides Royal Caribbean, Celebrity, Princess
and Carnival.
Mm-hmm. Those are the
and Norwegian.
Those
Norwegian
are the major
Caribbean.
Ones.
We did Norwegian Caribbean for our honeymoon many, many decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Princess is very nice. Carnival is too much of a party ship.
Mm-hmm.
But I may consider that on one of their larger ships, trying that again, possibly.
So which is your favorite cruise line?
Royal.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it just depends on like what's available and what the deals are and at the time.
Yeah, and where you want to cruise out of. You know, we cruised this time out of New Jersey, which was fabulous. It was a 2.5-hour drive to the pier. Got on, you know, parking garage was right there, so it was really easy. Tom dropped me off. You turn your bags over to the porter. He parked the car. We walked in. It was great.
So this sounds the most accessible.
Yeah, we were home before 12 o'clock on last Sunday.
Nice.
You know, normally, we're still sitting in an airport going, ugh.
And you beat all the nasty weather. You didn't have a whole lot of bad weather.
11 more hours. No, we had no bad weather. It rained a little bit on Friday, which was fine because we weren't doing beach that day. We just kind of walked around the pier, went into the stores, and then went back to the ship and laid out in the sun when it came out.
Mm, that sounds relaxing. Mm-hmm. Well, we back here in the desert and the other kind of sand, we've got our monsoon has officially started. And we've gotten some good monsoon rains and some nice thunder shows. Sometimes we'll just sit out back and watch the lightning as if it were a firework show. So that's pretty cool.
I love that.
Yeah. In fact, I'm looking out my window now and my Ocotillo went poof. I took some before pictures, so now I have to take some after pictures. It doesn't have a bloom yet, but that's coming next. So yeah, this is the part of the year where the desert's like all, you know, it's all dry. And it's kind of like, you know, if you were to say out east, you know, when your trees die and everything's kind of brown and everything, and then your spring, everything blooms again. That's how it is during monsoon. Everything looks kind of dead for a while, and then all of a sudden, oof.
Yeah.
So the allergies are coming, and yeah, I don't look forward to that. I'll be taking extra allergy meds. So yeah, that's how it is out here. Still, it's hot. It's that's why I told you, I said it's so hard to get up in the morning because now we're everything's shifted because of the heat. So we choose to stay up late because we're on summer vacation with school being out. So we can afford to do that. Now, if we worked, you know, during the summer, I work with clients, that's different. But if we were, you know, 9-to-5ers during the summertime, of course, we'd be going from air conditioning to air conditioning. That wouldn't be too terrible. But we're not. So when we go out and about, you have to recuperate. When you go outside for any length of time, like even just to go to the pool, your butt's tired later because you absorb all that heat and you have to recuperate. So, and then it gets like really moist in the evenings because of the rain. So we have that humidity and we're kind of like ick. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? Like, you have to understand the desert. It's so dry. You can smell it. You can smell it coming and you can feel it like on your skin. Like, oh, it's going to rain. Might not look like it, but you can feel it. So it's nice. It's just the desert's becoming beautiful. And so I like this time of year. Aside from the rain, it does sort of prevent us from going places at times because you have to watch the roads. Just like you guys have the black ice that you got to be careful of when it snows and it's icing out there.
Yep.
You have to stay where you are. Out here, it's very deceptive because it looks fine and you could go take a trip. But if you haven't, like, this is when we do need weather apps. You know how we've always joked about how there's no weather here? Well, this time of year, there's weather. And so we do have to be checking the maps, you know, the radar maps to see what's coming in, because it's very deceptive. It could be, you could be out somewhere and it could be so bright and sunny and it will be raining. There's a word for that and I forget what it is. I guess it's a sun shower, but it's so deceptive. It's like, how can it be raining when it's perfectly sunny? Doesn't feel like there's a cloud overhead. It's so strange.
Don't you get dust storms too?
We do. We get haboobs. Yes. Especially if you're out on the highway. So there's a list of things that will kill you in Arizona or at least make your life really challenging. So otherwise it's very calm and same here, but on the list of things that will kill you are dust storms if you're not careful. So you don't want to be out in that, because that can make, that's like a wall of sand. And it just makes visibility next to nil. So you got to be really careful about the haboobs. We get mostly, those are like out in more like really open areas where there's not a lot of things blocking it. But, you know, in around like, you know, residential areas, we'll get these little dust devils. And they can be like a tiny little tornado that kicks up a bunch of dust. And they're kind of cool to watch, but you really don't want to be like near them because they blow rocks and stuff at you. So that's something to be aware of. And then there's the flooding. I mean, that's the biggest one. It's like I said, it's very deceptive. You can, if you don't check ahead of time to see what might be coming your way, you could be out and about enjoying your day, well, trying to anyway, in 100 plus temperatures, and then all of a sudden the sky will open up, it'll rain, and there's nowhere for the rain to go. And there's pictures of, you know, towns just very close to us where people are canoeing in the street, which, and I should say a little bit of a PSA here too. I've learned recently that you should not, not that we've done it, but you know, you should not go out into the flooded streets, because you don't know if sewers have been backed up or there's, you know, chemicals from cars and all kinds of nasty stuff that will be in that water. So yeah, people end up having to get rescued. I think we have a list of, you know, things to avoid, and one of them is stupid drivers. Like, that's actually a phenomenon out here. If you're a stupid driver, meaning like you haven't checked and you went somewhere where you shouldn't have, where water collects, and then you get stuck and then you have to get rescued. So, and you don't want to end up on the news.
We get that too, believe me.
Really? Yeah.
We get those too. It'll say on the news, please, if you see that there's a flood on the street, please do not drive through it, because you don't know how deep it really is.
Yes.
And cars go through, and then they're up to the window.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, well, how did this happen?
Yep.
You were told not to.
It's pretty extreme weather, so we've really got to be careful about, you know, where we're going to go and stuff. So there's a lot of, that's why this time of the year, it's kind of lazy. And, you know, that's why I said we kind of shift everything, because it's just too hot and too dangerous to be out doing stuff during the day. So if you want to do anything, especially like walking your pets outside, you have to do it really early in the morning. I'm talking like 4 o'clock in the morning. You have to do it really early in the morning, because pretty soon, like, it's going to be hot even at night trying to sleep. And so it just makes it really difficult. So that's why there is such a thing as a siesta. So I really wish that we could normalize that. I really wish that people would just understand that it's hot. Everybody just go to sleep during the middle of the day. Like, do all your stuff like late at night or way early in the morning, because you're still up late at night. Because I am, you know, active a lot of times at 4 a.m. because I'm still up from the night before. And then, you know, I like to go to bed at like, say, between 4 and 7 a.m. and then sleep till about 12, 2. Like, that would be ideal. That would be totally ideal if that could be normalized and I could just do that without being judged for it. Because that's how I conserve energy. That's when I'm most productive and most active. But it's not quite, it hasn't quite caught on yet. So we'll see. I'm gonna segue into the things I want to talk about here. Also on the list of things that are out to get you while living in Arizona, a little cute thing that I discovered. And I knew this was a thing, but I hadn't really used it for this purpose before. But on your iPhone, on your iOS devices, you can use a feature called Visual Lookup. And it's in the Photos app. So if you've ever gone and looked at a picture, if you went and long press on the image in the center of the picture, it will start to make this little outline around it. And I'll have a link to the show notes as to, you know, what exactly this is, how you engage with it, and what model devices are it's supported on. But I'll tell you right now, it goes all the way back to the SE, I think what it was, a second generation. So it's on pretty much all of the more modern phones. If you have like a 6S or a 7 or something, then no, you won't be able to. But anything more modern than, say, an iPhone SE or iPhone 10, you'll be able to do this on. So you take your image, you long press on it. If you release your finger after it starts to form that little outline, you'll get a little pop-up, and when, in one of those pop-ups, it'll say look up. Well, so on the list of things that are out to get you while living in Arizona is spiders this time of year. So I noticed that now since the moisture has arrived, not only do we have cicadas, do you have cicadas out where you are? Because there's supposed to be two, I guess, groups of cicadas that have their cycles have become aligned, and that normally doesn't happen. Do you have cicadas?
Not that I'm aware of.
I don't know where all they're going to be. Supposedly there's maps I have to go look up and see where they're actually hatching, because I'm starting to hear them. Not everywhere, but I'm starting to hear them. And I mean, I don't know about you, but out here, they are loud. They are really loud, like so intrusive that when you want to sit outside, you have to be able to tolerate that noise for a while. It's unrelenting. So that's another reason why you want to do things at night, because the cicadas are really freaking loud. Like they're having their party, they're mating, they're doing their thing like during the day. So yes, cicadas are another thing. And so what I noticed, we were watching a movie the other night, and along comes, you know, they're totally, the kids and Nate are like totally in the movie, and I'm looking up at the ceiling and I'm like, what is that thing that's moving? Normally it's a bug or, you know, something, right? And we don't, knock on wood, I hate to jinx myself, but this place that we live in is not, we don't have a whole lot of bugs. So that's a relief. Our old house that we lived in got old kind of bugs. And so, you know, we have to worry about scorpions, but we haven't seen a scorpion in a while. We have to treat for termites out here. So there are definitely things like, you know, critters that will come in the house. I don't mind lizards. I'm not afraid of lizards, but spiders, a couple years ago, I found a big spider that it was dead, but it like fell out. I don't know. I was moving stuff around in the laundry room because they like dark places. And I was in the laundry room closet and one popped out at me. And thankfully it was dead, but it scared the crap out of me. And it was like the size of the palm of my hand. It was huge. And I couldn't figure out what it was. You know, I looked online, kind of thought maybe it might be. Well, now I know what it is because, like I said, we were watching a movie and I saw one crawling across the ceiling. And so we stopped the movie. Nate ran and got like a plastic cup and we captured it. And I always, especially with a big one like that. Now, this one was, if I had to say, it was like, it fit, it, not that I picked it up, but because I wouldn't, but it would fit in the palm of your hand. It was much smaller. And the thing is, it only had six legs. So it must have, I thought maybe Opal, like maybe she had gotten a hold of it. But no, I don't think that was, but it must have lost two of its legs because I looked that up too. Anyway, so I took pictures of it. I have terrible arachnophobia, so I'm like, it's
disgusting.
Yeah, it's so hard for me to do, but my desire to know that it's not a recluse spider overrides my arachnophobia so that I can get close enough to document and take pictures of it. And so if you follow me on Facebook, you can go see, I posted some pictures of it, and I even put, because I can't stand when people do that, I put content warning spider. And so I put the pictures in the comments. I even made like a little like collage of it. It's like trying to do like aversion therapy because I'm going, ew, 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 the whole way. Oh, it was terrible. But anyway, so what I'm really grateful for, though, is that visual lookup tool, because I was able to get finally a good enough picture of it. And this is the thing. Like, I was trying so hard to get the abdomen, because that's where you want to get the picture of, because that's usually the marking that helps you identify it. But this tool is so good. When I started looking at my pictures, I actually discovered this accidentally. I long pressed on it, and I thought, no, I'm not going to make a sticker. Like, I didn't want to. I'm not making a sticker of a spider. That would just be cruel and evil. That would be, no. That, a psychopath would do that. Now watch. Somebody's going to send me a spider sticker. You better not if you want to be friends. And so I lifted my finger and I noticed it said look up. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I've done this with plants before. So I tapped on it. And wouldn't you know it, it identified it as a huntsman spider. So they are harmless to humans, but they can bite, and their bite can be really painful, like a bee sting. So I don't want to mess with them at all. But yeah, so that's my first PSA, is if you're taking pictures of bugs and you want to try to identify them, use the visual lookup tool in iOS Photos. You can do it in iPad too. And you can hopefully identify what that bug or what that spider is. And you don't necessarily need to get the best picture of it with the abdomen. So you can quick take your snapshot and then go look it up and get out of there. So that was a handy dandy tool, because I was really obsessing over it. I was really freaking out, because every time I see a brown spider like that, I think recluse. I just, I don't even know. I forget. I don't even think they even live here, but I'm always thinking like somebody could bring one, you know, in their luggage or food, or I just always think one will like come here. So yeah, they're technically harmless. I still don't want them in my house.
I freak out for a daddy long legs. So.
Oh, really? Yeah, no, daddy long legs don't bother me too much. There's certain spiders.
I don't do insects. Nope.
There's certain spiders I will leave alone only because, like, well, see, and the thing is, the huntsmen, they don't build webs. They're called huntsmen because they hunt. They hunt their prey. And so they will eat, like, lizards and crickets and things like that. And I don't want the dog to, you know, encounter it. They are nighttime, which is why I notice it, because I'm up more in the evening. But, yeah, I have found centipedes, millipedes. I have seen a tarantula in my backyard briefly. I didn't want to get too close to it, but I saw it out of the corner of my eye. So that's another thing. Because of the moisture, like, they come out because they're looking for other bugs and things like that. And maybe the cicadas, I don't know. So yeah, the bugs and the creatures are coming out.
I just want to let you know that when I wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares, I'm going to call you because you'll still be awake.
That's true.
So when the phone rings at, you know, maybe midnight your time, it's me.
I should probably put like a content warning in the beginning of the post of this too, huh?
If you're afraid of spiders, fast forward.
Right. Too late. Or do like I did and like, you know, soothe your mind by getting a picture of it and making sure it's not something really deadly. So yeah, black widows and yeah. So it's that time of the year. In other related software things that I wanted to talk about, some not so great news. I think I've told you, we've talked about calendars and reminders and all kinds of apps and stuff. And I've been using the Riattle Calendars 5 for many years now. I bought the Calendars 5, like I bought the whole, it was probably like $10 at the time or something. But I bit and I bought it because I really do like a good calendar app. The stock calendar app on iPhone is like, it's meh. It's just like, it's there. It's just not, there's not a whole lot of special. But I did see that in the future version, the next version of iOS 18, I believe one of the features is going to be that they're going to incorporate to-do items or your reminders list. And that's one of the things that's incorporated in Calendars 5 that I liked. And so, unfortunately, though, Riattle, you know, because developers got to eat and they got to keep the lights on. So they're now transitioning from a lifetime, you know, buy it once type of way, and now they're going to subscription. So they're moving on to the subscription model, and it's now going to be it's $19.99. So it's $20 a year if you want to still keep using Riattle Calendars. So it's Calendars with an S on the end of it. The 5 is going away. They're going to sunset that app. You're no longer going to be able to use that because that's what we paid once for many, many years ago. So, I mean, you know, it was a good run while we had it. I still do like Calendars 5. In fact, if you are inclined, I mean, I might consider keeping it. I'm in the evaluation phase. I'm like, well, can I live without it? You know, I might not want to. I might consider paying the $20 a year subscription because you get it on all your apps, you get all your devices. You get it. You pay that one fee and you get it on across the platforms. So that might make it worth it. And, you know, it'd have to have some really compelling features that just aren't available or aren't going to become available in the stock iOS Calendars app. But the thing that does disappoint me is that they do not, and I've written to them and they wrote back and I gave them a lot of suggestions. It's a great app, but it needs some polish. There's a few things, you know, nitpicky things. Like when you, in the modern versions of macOS, for example, because there's a Mac version of the Calendars app, and when you click on the title of the app in the upper corner, it should say settings, not preferences, because we're going with settings now. So just little nitpicky things like that. So I sent them some feedback. Hopefully they'll implement those changes relatively quickly. The other thing I don't like is like you and I, you know, we're in different time zones. And that's kind of a deal breaker for me because I do work with a lot of clients in different time zones. When I add something to the Apple calendar, without the S on the end of it, I can change the time zone. And so I could put for you that you're in, you know, New York time or, you know, Eastern time, and I'm in Mountain time. I like to put things on my calendar using your time zone. So then I can see, you know, what the time, I know what it is, but it's just like nice to have a visual reminder. And for you, like, cause you live in New York, like I'm used to that cause my people are in Pennsylvania, but for people like in the middle, like in Chicago or other places around the world, I don't have those differences memorized. And so I kind of need to know what they are. So I need to see what the time difference is. In Riaddle calendars, you have to use their natural language input in order to say, you know, record Geeky Show Ever podcast with Elisa at, you know, 1 p.m. Eastern. You have to like say that, and then it will put it on the calendar in the correct time zone, but it won't show you the difference between the two. And that I really miss. So for that, one of those, that's one of the deal breakers where it might just keep me on the stock Apple calendars app. Unless if they added that, I might consider it. So I just kind of got this running list of like features that if they brought them in, then it would be, I would more consider paying the $20 a year to have those features and then some, because they do it really nicely. And in my opinion, the design is a little bit better than Apple's. And you can view it in a list and in an agenda format, things like that. It just gives you a lot more control over how you view your events. And I really like that. They also have interesting calendars that you can subscribe to, but you can do that in the stock calendar too. You just have to do a little bit more work for it. So, but like I was going to say, the thing that disappoints me the most is they have not adopted family sharing. So, for example, I didn't push the kids into it. The kids are still using the stock calendar app, but my husband was using it and, you know, he liked it too. He, you know, it's not that he could care less, but if he's going to have to pay $20 a year also, then no, he's just going to stick to using the stock calendar app. So if they were to bring in family sharing, that's another consideration that I would make to pay the extra $20, because it's $20 a year. It's not, you know, $20 one time. It's $20 a year. So that always ends up making software a lot more expensive because you're using it year over year over year. But like I said, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I think developers have to eat too, and I want to support developers. It's just a matter of, for me, value, and I don't have all the disposable income to be able to support that. So, you know, maybe it'd be a tax write-off for my business if I justify it that way. And I could, you know, but it's going to have those features for me to be able to continue paying for that each year. So,
well, you know that I use Fantastical.
Yeah.
Now,
that's
the good thing with Fantastical, which is also a subscription model, I was able to keep the old version until such time they say we're no longer supporting it on whatever the new iOS, the new macOS is. But so far, so good. If you want a subscription, it's individually $4.75 a month, billed annually, which is $57 a year.
Wow, that's a lot. So it's like you're paying $60 for a calendar app.
And if you have up to five people in your family, it's $7.50 a month, billed annually.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at, you know, close to $100.
Right. One password is $60 for the whole family.
Yeah. But you also get CardHop, which is your...
contact sync. Yeah,
contacts. The word just escaped me for the moment. Yes, so you have your business cards, scanning. It creates groups. You have custom templates. So there's a whole list on the website of what it offers.
Yeah,
if that's your thing, it's something to consider. For me, I have no use for that whatsoever.
Right.
And the basic free Fantastical suits my particular needs just fine. Now, something else to think about is currently, and I can't say that this is going to last forever. If you are subscribing to Fantastical, whether it's individually or as the family group, Rakuten is offering 25% cash back. So that's something to think about.
Yeah, it says for families up to five, it'd be $7.50. And I probably wouldn't, I'd be a pest if I tried to get my family to use something like that. They're like, they're just not picky like me. So I'd probably stick with the individual.
So that's $90. Yes, that's $90 a year. And then $90. Whoops.
So if it's a for one single person, it's $4.75 a month. So
it's $57.
Yeah. So that's just for one person.
The Rakuten. Yeah. And then after the Rakuten cash back, it's $42. So if you do the family of five, it's $90, and after the cash back, it would be $67.50.
I think 1Password has a cash back with Rakuten also, if I'm not mistaken.
For the first time.
Just the first time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I got in touch with 1Password at one time. They go, yeah, you've already, you've been a member too long, you know, subscriber too long. Not for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's that's a tough pill to swallow to be paying 60 for, you know, a credential manager, which I don't mind because to me that's an invaluable utility. But then to be paying for a calendar and a contact manager on top of that, I don't know. It would have to do something really special that isn't possible.
It, again, it depends on who you are and what your needs are. For me personally, if I had to go back to use the Apple Calendar exclusively, so be it.
Right. I could see using it for my business. I could see using it, but like it would have to help me schedule appointments. There's scheduling, but yeah. I don't know. So with Fantastic Call, I haven't used it in years because it ended up charging, but you can use a free version. Because I'm looking at the pricing page and they do have a list of what you get with the free. You can add accounts, events, tasks, delete events and tasks, notifications, full screen, day, week, month, quarter, and year, full task support, including iCloud reminders and Todoist, show locations, event details, weather forecast. You only get 3 days. In the premium, you get 10 days. Email support is standard versus priority. And then for the productivity, you only get home screen widgets. So what you don't get is you don't get calendar syncing. Well, that's kind of important. Right. Yeah.
I want to check something.
Yeah, you don't get travel time, which you do get with Apple Calendar. You don't get time to leave notifications, Apple Watch support. You do get the widgets. Yeah, so there's just too much missing out of the free for me to really even bother with it, I think.
So it's hard to tell. I'm looking at the App Store. It's hard to tell if you can download it and use it for free with limited functionality, like I said, which is fine for me, or if they say, okay, your time is up, now you have to pay. It says try Fantastical for free.
There's a scheduling component that sounds interesting to me under securely request time. It says Fantastical makes it easy for people to schedule meetings with you, set up the times you're available, and share your Fantastical link. They pick a date and time and you are all set. But do they have to have Fantastical? That would be interesting. Schedule events based on your open availability. I might actually consider the trial of this to see if that would replace my Calendly. That's interesting. Invitees, conference calls. Yeah, I might look at this again. So I'm glad we talked about this because I might be able to justify, you know, $60 with the, you know, the price reductions. I might be able to justify that as a business expense if that were to help me schedule clients, you know, book appointments better. I'd have to see how it would integrate with my website. So that's something I'm going to look at. Darn it, Alisa, you might have cost me some money.
it's for the good.
Yeah, right. Good. Yeah. Let's talk about one other app, and that is Paprika. And so we talked about this a while ago when it went on sale. I think we both grabbed it. You cost me money back then too.
It was $2.99.
Right. Yeah, it was a good price. Now that's I didn't mind that at all. I think it's for what it does. That's pretty amazing. From reading the history of it, it kind of sounds to me like they're the type, they don't do the subscription model, but they do is you pay like a lifetime fee, I guess what it is. And so you don't have to keep paying per month. It's one price. You know, we grabbed a deal at the time. I want to say it's like $4.99, I think.
Yeah, it's still $4.99 regular price.
Yeah, that's still not a bad price for what this does for you. I mean, it's a pretty good value. But then I think what will happen is like they're on version 3. So it's not just called Paprika. There's a bunch of things in the App Store that are called Paprika. This one is called Paprika 3. And so that tells me that they're probably, you know, working on version 4 and they're probably going to make you pay it again, which still, I that's one model. That's one way of doing things. I still think that's more cost effective than having to pay a subscription. So I support that. I support subscription too. It just has to be really, you know, really a good value for that price. It has to be something that really serves your needs. And so I could see paying, you know, again for Paprika, you know, for the next version, if we can get into it. The Mac version though is like $30. So you're talking, you know, almost like $35 by the time you're done to support all platforms. So you get it on your iPhone, your iPad, There is limited stuff on the Apple Watch. It's not like a fully fledged app, but there's features, probably only what you need on the Apple Watch. And then there's the Mac version. And then I think they also support other platforms like Android and Windows a little bit. But, you know, we're going to talk about what we know. And so I'm trying to justify the cost of putting on the Mac because I can see how it's the front loading. Right. It's the getting your whole pantry loaded in there. It's getting all the recipes input that you want to use. It's the front loading. And I'm thinking like this would be so much easier if I could do it on the Mac. But the sync is what's bothering me right now. And I'm still in the process of evaluating it, trying to figure out, is the problem on our end or is it an issue with the type of sync in the app? And so I'm going to spend some time. I'll put the links in the show notes. I have them queued up. There's actually an r/paprika app in Reddit that you can subscribe to. And people are asking about sync frequency. And so I'm noticing that I'm having issues with sync frequency, meaning that if I put something on the app, what I expect it to do is like how reminders work. So currently we use the reminders app as our grocery list, or we call it a shopping list. And so the spells and incantations that we use go something like, hey, S lady, add paprika to the shopping list, or add onions to the shopping list. And so we do that, like when I'm in the kitchen and I'm adding things or my husband's adding things, I'm in there talking to my watch and I'm going through the cupboard. Okay, I need flour, sugar, whatever. I go in the freezer, the refrigerator, I go to the pantry, and I'm adding things like that I know we need before I leave to go shopping, right? So they don't end up getting stuff that we don't need. But then once I'm in the app, say I'm doing it manually and I'm not using my voice to add things using the Siri integration, I'm actually typing things out. What I really wish I could do is, this is where their Apple intelligence could come into play. If Apple intelligence could get smart enough to say, you already put onions on the list, it's already here, so let me just uncheck that for you. You know, like it's not intelligent enough to see that I've gone and added these things and then they end up like building up. They're checked off. But if I wanted to say, show me completed items, I would like to see what I've already purchased. But I usually can't because the list gets so long with redundancy. So if Apple can figure out a way to do that, where their smart list is truly a smart list and it's used as a shopping or grocery list, if it was truly smart, it would detect when you're adding something that's already on the list and uncheck it for you so that you could just kind of reuse and uncheck and recheck those things. But we're not there yet. The future isn't here yet. So we kind of just like, I clear it out once in a while once it starts getting lots of buildup of duplicates. And also the aisle or the category is not that great. I mean, I'll put something on the list and it'll put it in a category that it doesn't belong in, you know, or it'll just stick it in other when it's like, come on, that's really obvious. Why didn't you just put it in produce, right? Why did you put it in other? So how smart are you really? So that's my beef with Apple Reminders app as using it as a shopping list. For everything else, it's pretty good. And then talking about paprika again, the problem that I'm having is trying to use it as a grocery list. First of all, in their instructions, it says in order to use the Siri integration, you have to say, hey, S lady, add onions to the grocery list in paprika 3. You have to put the 3 on the end of there. If you just use paprika, it doesn't work. And for the longest time, I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. And I don't know what made me think of it, but I finally said paprika 3 and then it worked. So I think they should, you know, polish their instructions a little bit, especially if they're going to go and make like a version 4 and a 5 and a 6. You know, you need to be able to use the phrase with that version number on it. I don't know how they would be able to do it without the version number because there are so many other paprika, you know, apps that have paprika in the name. So I don't know how that's going to shake out. But as far as the sync frequency goes, the problem that I'm having with it is my husband and I are sharing this. So he has an iPhone and an Apple Watch. I have an iPhone and an Apple Watch and an iPad. And if I add it using one of my devices, it doesn't sync in live time to his. So I can have both of our phones next to each other. I add onions to the grocery list. It shows up on mine eventually. And then it just doesn't sync to his. The only way I can get to sync to his is if we close the app and reopen it again, or if I switch and toggle between like a different, like I have in my Paprika 3 app, I have groceries, household, and party. Those are the three apps that I, or the three lists that I have to say. And unless I toggle between different lists, then it will sync, but it doesn't do it in real time. So I don't know what needs to change there. They're not using iCloud. They're using some other proprietary server, I believe, and that's probably built into the price that they have to pay. So that's kind of my beef with it right now. So I will keep working at it, and I will write to the developer once I figure out just how to put into words exactly what the problem is. When I write a developer, I try to take my time and take screenshots and show them, look, visually, like this is what's happening or what's not happening. Like this is what's supposed to happen, what I expect to happen, and it's not happening. You know, and I like to give the developer feedback about that so they can see exactly what the problem is. I don't know how responsive they're going to be, so we'll find out. So I'll report back on that, but that's what I want to be using. I think it's beautiful. I've watched some really terrific tutorials on YouTube. I know there's another list that I've looked into called AnyList, and I know a lot of people who use that for groceries. Have you ever tried AnyList? That's another one of those ones where, kind of like Fantastic Caloriadals, like it does all the things that reminders do and then some, but you have to be able to justify the cost if you're going to be paying whatever it is for the subscription model to use that. And as a family, and that can get kind of pricey because we, you know, with groceries, we are trying to build the kids in. We're trying to teach them. They will frequently add things to the grocery list, you know, and we want them to start maybe doing the grocery shopping, you know, and so they're going to need that tool, especially with, you know, it's a really good accommodation tool for our neurodivergent brains here. So yeah, I might look into that, but I think I've looked into it in the past, and the problem I had with AnyList was it didn't have good Siri integration, because I really, really need that. That's going to be a deal breaker. If they can make it so that it works really well with Siri, then I might consider that. But other than that, it kind of does the Reminders app already does everything that I would use AnyList for. So that's lists. Okay, that was all I had for my software stuff.
I've been talking to you and didn't realize my mic was off.
Aha. Uh-huh. What are you using you use paper for your grocery list, right?
Yeah. I use paper and pen.
Yeah. But is it because you're the only one that's doing the grocery shopping?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So we've got four people that could potentially be doing grocery-related stuff, whether it's getting the groceries or putting the groceries away or coming up with a meal plan or something like that. We're trying to get the kids involved in making dinner now. So we've got four different brains in here that we've got to accommodate.
Yeah. I was going to say, before I noticed my mic was muted, the good news, maybe not so good news about Paprika. Mm-hmm. The good news is it has 4.9 out of 5 star rating.
Oh, yeah.
People love it.
People do love it. Yeah.
Potential bad news is it hasn't been updated in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look back at the version history.
That's what I was going to ask Ness. Like, how frequently 3.7,
3.72 was a year ago. And it looks like as far back as this will go, this webpage doesn't seem to want to go any further than 3.3.0. That was 5 years ago.
Mm. So it's got like a slow update.
Yeah, so you really have to wonder, is this the developer's main gig, mm-hmm. or is this kind of a side gig that he's doing when he's not doing his quote-unquote real job?
Right. See, and that's why I think a lot of them end up switching to subscription models, because I can see how if you're only charging so much per year, like the cost to benefit analysis might not be worth it. You know, there's a lot of apps that I've seen go by the wayside because of that. That's why I say, you know, I would support subscription as long as I can justify the cost. We've all got to be able to justify the cost. I don't mind paying a subscription. I see some really, really horrible comments. I forget which one it was. There was a Ukrainian developer, and I use a lot of Ukrainian apps, actually. And so that's why I forget which one it was. But somebody like said something really nasty about like us, you know, supporting them. And, you know, why have they switched to? Oh, I think it was actually Riyadhal Calendars 5. I think that's really nasty. I think if a developer has switched to a subscription model, you should still support them, because they're not doing it to be greedy, like everybody says. They're doing it to keep their lights on. You know, they have figured out that they're not making enough money. And if you want versions to be updated, then you should pay a subscription model. It's simple as that. You can't get everything for free, you know? So, yeah, but I mean, those are definitely things that I have to think about when I'm trying to figure out the support. Now, when you were looking in the App Store for the versions, are you looking at iOS or are you looking at the Mac too?
No, I'm on the Mac.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'm wondering if they update the iOS as frequently or more frequently.
Let me check.
And I wonder where.
Let's see. Paprika.
I'm trying to find.
Recipe manager. Okay. So organize. Okay. Version history is 9 months ago.
Mm-hmm. So it could be that they update it more frequently.
3.8.1. And it's this goes back to 4 years ago, 3.4.6. So in the last year, they've gone from 3.7.1 to 3.8.1. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 updates in about 3 months.
Yeah, so they do update the iOS versions more frequently. That makes sense because more people are on the go and using them. So they don't. So the Mac version doesn't get as much love as the iOS version, but the Mac version's $30. So I would like to see the Mac version updated a little bit more. I mean, I guess they can justify charging more for the Mac version, but then they should be updating it a little bit more than they are. Because, you know, there's definitely feature requests that I have and feature requests that I'm seeing in the reviews. So people love it and people want it to be the best that it can be. So when people are asking for features, it's because they're really using it and they can see where that feature would become really, really valuable to them. I wonder what would happen if they were to switch to using iCloud instead of their own server. And I've seen apps do that too. I've worked with a lot of apps over the years that have syncing involved, like Chore Charts was a big one. And I know that back in the old days, like they would use Dropbox and sometimes that was a problem, or they'd use their own proprietary SQL server and then they have to pay for the upkeep of that. And so that can drive the cost. And then sometimes it's just not, you know, it doesn't work as well as the iCloud sync. But then I guess they have problems with, I can't remember all the details, but I know that the developers, it's not just as cut and dry as like, well, let's just use iCloud, because then they have, that brings in a whole other set of issues for them to deal with that might be more difficult to support and cost more money. So they're trying to keep the cost down. So yeah, so Paprika, I want to keep digging on and I'll keep reporting back on that as things improve, or if they don't, or if I find something else that's better. But if listeners have any solutions to these things, or if they're hearing us talk about these apps and saying, oh, well, you know, hands down, you've got to use it for this feature alone. So I'd like to know what your deal breakers are, and you know where to contact us, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too.
So before we wrap up for the day, we have some feedback from Bob Wood. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
And he said, just listen to your Card and Cams podcast, which I believe was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It is easy to figure out why Costco only accepts one brand of credit card. Think about it, and I'm sure that you will get it when you follow the money. When you or I take a credit card payment, we pay 3% for the privilege. I am sure that all credit cards would be happy to cut that to 2% for the Costco volume. But Visa is offering Costco an even sweeter deal if Visa is exclusive. For the sake of argument, let's say that's 1%. I would love to have 1% of what Costco registers ring up in a week in one store. Just look at all the activity at the checkout lanes. 1% would be a lot of money. My response to that is, would that be legal?
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know enough about that kind of stuff to know if it was legal.
Yeah, I don't know.
It'd be interesting to find out. Because what he says, I mean, he has a great point. And yeah, that makes sense if you just follow the money. Because we should just to connect this back for context, and if you listen to the previous show, we were talking about, we talked a little bit about shopping at Costco. And one of the beefs that I have is I wish I could use my Apple card, because I just want to be able to use one card everywhere as much as I possibly can. And they do not accept, they do contactless payment, but it has to be a Visa. And so we now are on the fence about whether or not we're going to continue to shop at Costco. We still have both. We still have Sam's Club and Costco, but we really want to get rid of Sam's Club. We don't want to get rid of it. We really want to stop paying for two big box store membership fees, because we've moved and it's a logistics issue. We're just too far away from Sam's Club. Like now that, you know, it's summer, we're not driving out there as much, right? Because I'm not taking the kids to school. I was weaving, I was building in my Sam's Club trips when I was dropping the kids off at school. And now that's going to change with one graduate. And now that we have Costco. But it's just one of those things where it's like, well, if we're going to start shopping there more, then we'll get their branded Visa. It's like apps and credit cards and you know, where do you put your loyalty? where it serves you the best and where there's the best value. And that's what I'm still trying to figure out.
I'm in the same position as far as, well, Sam's used to be Discover only. Now they take everything.
Right.
But we have BJ's. Mm-hmm. Now, I could apply for the BJ's credit card and that would lower the price of gas. Oh, God. I think it's 30 cents a gallon every time I use the card.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is. But then I have to do the math to see how much gas would we be getting? Mm-hmm. How much would the savings be? How much do I have to pay for that card?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just not worth the aggravation. It's just, I'll just use my own Visa card that I have.
Right.
And just paid a little bit more for the gas, which is still cheaper than everybody else's gas.
Right. Right.
And do I want to have yet another credit card?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I'm trying to keep that more simpler. I don't want to have
so much. And it dings your credit.
Exactly. Because then you have a lot of open revolving credit that isn't being used.
Yeah.
So.
And the only place I would use that card is at BJ's.
Mm. Now, the Costco card that they offer, I believe I could use it anywhere. So that's what's tempting about it. If we're going to shop there more, then we could. It is just a Visa. So I could use it at other places. I wouldn't.
Oh, yeah. The BJ's card I could use anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I would only use it at BJ's because I have other Visa cards
that are better.
I use to get those perks.
Yes. Yep. It's all about the perks. Do you collect airline mileage?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I got something in the mail from BJ's that I'm going to use when Shane comes up next week, at the end of next week. If I spend $150, I think it's $150 at that time, they'll give me 50 cents off of a gallon of gas,
Nice.
Which is significant.
Yeah.
So I figure between the things that I need and the things that he needs, we'll easily spend $150.
Mm-hmm.
And if my car doesn't need gas, we'll use it for his.
And it sounds a lot like it's the gas, it's the fueling of the car that's driving a lot of this stuff. Because that's what's so expensive. That's why we got a hybrid. because I guess the last couple of years, there was a time where our gas prices skyrocketed because we were going to Sam's Club. And they, there was a while like where they weren't getting gas. And so we had to go elsewhere because of the supplier. Like something happened with the supplier that was cut off. And so it was driving the price up really, really high because of a lack of supply. And so, that's just something that's going to keep happening. It's not like that's going to go away. That's only going to get worse as we start to electrify things and it makes a shift in supply. And we're not quite there where we want to be with EVs. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Melissa, if listeners like Bob would like to get in touch with us with their feedback, how would they do so?
We would really appreciate that. We do have a variety of ways that you can do that. You can go to our website, geekishshowever.com, and click our contact tab there and send us a message that way. We also have just straight up email. You can email us podcast@geekishshowever.com. And then we also have some socials. We're now on Threads and Instagram. You can follow us over there at Geekiest Show Ever in both places. And then we have a couple of other things, right?
Mm-hmm. On Mastodon, I am at SenseiDai at Mastodon.social. Melissa is at the Mac Mommy at Mastodon.cloud. And the show is at Geekiest Show Ever at TechHub.social. And if you forget all that, you can just go to themacmommy.com to find all things Melissa or geekyshowever.com to get the show notes and find out our social handles. So with that, we want to thank you so much for listening. We will be back again in a couple of weeks. And until then, please stay safe.